Welcome to today's episode of Eurobytes at the end of April. We are still in the Easter week. Today is the Doubting Thomas Sunday. And as always with Eurobytes, we take a couple weeks off, we come back, and the whole world has changed. Since our last podcast, the pontificate was still under the reign of Pope Francis, and now we are in an interregnum period, and on St. Peter's Square, the faithful were gathered to mourn the deceased Pope as we basically, I would almost make the argument that we are not only politically headed into a new polar structure of the world, but we're also spiritually headed into a new order in which the world is structured. Regarding Europe, and one of the things that we've always covered on this podcast is, if Europe is anything, it's Christian. Now, obviously, today's Europe does not reflect that in any way, shape, or form. However, its history does. And if you're a spiritual person, for all those who have watched this show have probably come to know that we always have talked about the past. Well, the past is a part of us in the present, because if we don't have a history, we don't have a future. Now, what's been stunning over the past weekend, Easter let alone, was a very moving weekend. Besides the death of Pope Francis, we witnessed an astonishing amount of people that were baptized on Easter Sunday. The reports that I've been getting is that this was the highest recorded baptism worldwide that at least has ever been recorded. And the country that really was shining brightly in all of this was the country of France, the oldest daughter of the church, as they say. There were as I read, over 10,000 baptisms. And I do remember when Todd wrote an article back in 2019, with the burning of the Cathedral of Notre Dame, Todd wrote something to the extent of, well, will the phoenix rise out of the ashes? And I think that we are sort of in now the early stages of what is ahead. Because, you know, as again, I don't get tired of saying this, that we're entering an age where really the civilizations are re-civilizing themselves, and we are turning into an age of civilization. And what is the common denominator in a civilization? Well, it's religion. So we're witnessing that in India, we're witnessing that in Africa, we're witnessing that in Russia, we're witnessing that in North America. And slowly but surely, the old continent of Europe, too, is turning back to Christianity. Well, besides from the baptisms and the liturgical aspect, we do have to get a little political in all of this, because I am going to bring up what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And Christian, I do want to talk about the fact what an effect the election of a new pope is going to have. The cardinals will be gathering, as I read, next week in the Sistine Chapel to elect the new pope. I do listen to a lot of the Catholic podcasts, especially guys like Taylor Marshall from the United States, from Texas, and he's been doing a couple pieces on who's going to be pope. And what I find incredibly fascinating is the implications that a new pope will have on some of the political trends that are taking place. Because if we do look at the pontificate of Francis, we witnessed a pontificate where the pope spoke in some cases and sounded like a UN representative, somebody who represented the WHO, open borders, pro-refugee. Here's a pope that went to Lampedusa to speak for the refugees there. You had a pope that closed the church on Easter. administering strict COVID policies. You had a pope that, when it came to Ukraine, well, again, didn't take a clear stance. And a lot of the conservatives even were saying, if you do want to listen to sort of the teaching on what the church must do regarding Russia, it has to consecrate Russia. Well, he didn't do that fully either. In all of these instances, Francis, on a political scale, was much more on the side of liberals, leftists, than he was on conservatives. It would be unfair to completely call him a leftist because he was against abortion. I don't want to go into all of the details on all of this, but what I do want to come across is, if you elect a conservative pope, let's just go with the possibility of electing Cardinal Robert Sarah from Guinea in West Africa, you would have a very much anti-migration, anti-Islamist, very traditional conservative pope who sort of, and it is wrong to do this, but in essence, he would be somewhat of a MAGA type pope from Africa, which will make liberal heads explode because, you know, they see a man.
Well, we could make it MAVA for you. Make the Vatican great again.
Great again. Yeah. and by the way, the Vatican already has big walls, so they wouldn't have to build that wall. They already have the wall. Just on a side note. But the point I'm trying to make is, I think if you elect a conservative pope, it's going to have a big effect on the world. And if you elect a liberal pope, it's going to have a big effect on the world. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But Christian, I would like to hear your take on that. And as we obviously were combining these two spheres, the political and the spiritual, but basic Christian teaching tells us this goes hand in hand. After all, it was the papacy that crowned, you know, Charlemagne and started the Christian European Empire on St. Peter's Square. By the way, that was one of the first thoughts that I had when I was witnessing the funeral events of Pope Francis. You know, you see all these world leaders gathered there on that St. Peter's Square, and I said to myself, man, this is the square where Charlemagne was crowned, right? This is where he was crowned. This is what started Christ. This is where Christian Europe started, in that essence. So, anyways, to take us from the year 800 back to the present, Christian, what's your take, and what do you think is going to happen in the next couple of days, couple of weeks?
Well, that's anyone's guess. I don't have any insight how it works in the Vatican. I mean, apparently, and there's a parallel to US politics. So apparently what Pope Francis has done, he stuffed the Vatican, sort of what was the stuffing of the Supreme Court was always something that had been discussed.
The stuffing of cardinals, right?
Yeah. So there was a stuffing of cardinals. Let's see if that works. I mean, allegedly, last time somehow Francis was the surprise candidate, but anybody who knew anything about the Jesuits, how they went from being actually a defender of the faith, a very clever intellectual defender of the faith, to being just very clever, but also very progressive and leftist, where you had like the liberation theology in Latin America.
So we are in the factory in Kentucky. This is Alp World HQ, and we are at the end of the packing line. So I'm gonna show you how it works. We have a card, throw it in there. There's a packing slip. And then you have the Alp. And four, but that seems honestly like a lot. Three now, but it's good. You just pack a punch that, you know, for a normal 19 brand, it'd be like eight. You know, we think three is fine. Next one. Again, four. Let's go three in just to keep it fair. Okay. There you go. So you can see you can get fast at this. And really, it's just a matter of repetition. This is kind of the assembly line that, you know, Henry Ford devised so long ago.
Tucker, this, stealing all the Alp again.
The Teologia de la Liberación. And then you had was it cardinals or bishops like Boff and those kind of guys who really felt that Jesus would have been on the side of the struggling masses. And I'm like, okay, so let's see how that works out and how the stuffing of the cardinals has worked. Couple of other observations before I'm coming on how the swing towards the conservative wing of the Catholic Church and the progressive wing might work out. A couple of observations over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, not too long ago, I had my daughter christened, and for many of the attendees of that christening, it was the first religious service in a long time. For many, was in Scotland. For many, it has been the first religious service ever, but you could see it touched something in them. So a lot of folks came forward and said, look, this was just a beautiful service. And I mean, I deliberately picked a couple of hymns that were accessible but traditional. I don't like all the new stuff. They're almost the kumbaya kind of songs. So I picked none of the songs were younger than 100 years. So one was an English hymn called All Things Bright and Beautiful. The other one was a German one that also, given that that's where my family comes from, was sung one verse in German, one verse in English, sort of Great God, We Praise Thee. And then the last one was a lovely Irish hymn, Be Thou My Vision. And it seemed to touch something in people. And if I see, like even typically people in Scotland always preface things with, oh, you know, I'm not religious, but. Even like when you see the funeral of the Pope, and I make no bones of it, I didn't even like that Pope particularly for most of the things he said and some of the things he did. But the ritual is beautiful. I mean, a couple of snarky comments online, oh, you know, that looks really creepy, some of the stuff where some of them are wearing sort of black hoods and part of that stuff. But I think it detaches something very genuine in people. And the mere fact that christenings in sort of part of Europe's atheist heartland, France, were, well, in all fairness, traditional France never truly went away. It was just a minority. That baptisms are up big time shows something. And there was even church attendance was up in England for the first time in a long time. Suddenly Trafalgar Square, there were thousands of Christians celebrating Easter, even though our prime minister and our king had been using the chance to more profusely give their blessings to Muslims celebrating Eid. And even Prince Charles, in congratulating to Easter, managed to shoehorn in some praise for the Jews and for the Muslims. Well, come on, you're a defender of the faith. But as we know, Prince Charles altered that to defender of the faith.
And I like how you still call him Prince.
Yeah, yes. Ha, that's a Freudian slip, but it kind of shows. he never quite made it there. But yeah, that's be that as it may, I don't want to open that kind of worm with what I think about the current British monarchy. Where all of this might be heading. So I've been notoriously terrible about predictions. But I think where it might be heading, if we get a conservative pope, I do see a reinvigoration of the faith. I see a lot of people joining from the Protestant churches to a newly reinvigorated Catholicism. I mean, as in my case, I was baptized.
It's already happening.
I was
baptized. Especially by the way, especially big time in the United States, you're seeing mass of number of young men going to traditional Catholic parishes as well as Orthodoxy.
I was going to come to that. In my case, sort of, I was christened in the Lutheran Protestant faith, and then the Lutheran Protestant Church, where it is, it might as well be a youth organization or an old organization of the Green Party in Germany, where you have like stuff like I kid you not, a church gathering. Where all the faithful meet, and you've got stands with Bible readings and this and that, but there's also a stand where you can paint vulvas, so the vulva painting stand, and then obviously refugees welcome, and Jesus was a refugee, blah blah blah, to the point that they're almost blessing the weapons towards Ukraine. I mean, it's a really shameful case of affairs, but I always had that Catholic part of my family that I probably always felt more drawn to. Anyways, to that sort of more lived faith, So that for me is interesting. And if indeed there's a swing to the conservative, I think it will reinvigorate the Catholic Church. I have a lot of folks going there. If it doesn't, and the Catholic Church becomes another side organization of the German Green Party, or whatever,
and the UN,
yeah, and Davos, then what you then probably the Orthodox Church might just become the one organization holding up the banner. I don't mean to be down on all Protestants, because as we know, Protestant is probably the most diverse religious movement in world history.
Let me speak to that, because the Protestant Church has lost its way. I mean, I'm a Presbyterian. My father was a Presbyterian minister direct from Scotland. You know, the line goes all the way back. And they have lost their way, but a lot of the Orthodox Presbyterian churches are growing rapidly in New England. And so I find that interesting. And then the two questions, you know, there's Catherine Engelbrecht from True the Vote. You may not know of her. She's from a proud European heritage, her family. But she said the other day that we don't need more American patriots. We need more believers. And I think that is exactly, because this revolution has to happen before we can get the freedom back. So that's point one. And then the point two is, there's a big, a concern among a lot of Protestants that the Catholic and Orthodox churches put something in between you and God. So that has to be resolved. But I do see, I mean, I have family members who have gone Orthodox just because they are searching for, history and tradition and something that they can really feel proud of.
Yeah, I concur. I mean, now we're in the depth of the theological discussion, the sola scriptura, and indeed eliminating the mediator. And there is something to that. I mean, that's what I always admired about the Protestant churches, and, you know, up to now, still my own faith, where you do see the settlement of the Americas. And probably the Americas, you know, the frontier, would have not been settled in the way it has without the ability of believers being in the absolute frontier, outside any sort of parish, outside any sort of bishop's jurisdiction, and folks just having the Bible between the Bible and their conscience, and direct sort of conversation with God. And there's something absolutely beautiful and probably quintessentially American in that freedom. Mm-hmm. To be your own master, whereas I do think that there might be some sort of rethinking needed from the Catholic Church, where they look, we're going to put guardrails into where your faith can take place. Please don't do snake wrangling. that's probably weird, and you know, dial back the talking in tongues. But there's something to be said about the direct dialogue between you and God, where the priest may be a helper, but it doesn't have to be through the priest as such. But again, that is a high-flying theological discussion.
But the interesting thing is that, especially if you look at somebody like J.D. Vance, who comes from America's heartland, it's especially the heartland of the U.S. where you're witnessing this hard turn to orthodoxy or traditional Catholicism, which I find incredibly fascinating. That out of all places, it is especially in America, where you have bishops from Kansas that are going completely medieval. And I don't mean that derogatory. I mean that more in a fascinating way, like Cardinal.
Well, you're
Burke,
exactly right. I know somebody, sorry to interrupt, but there's a guy in Texas who I have a family member. He's a Russian Orthodox, priest, I guess you would call him. But that's exactly him. I mean, he's masculine. That's what these boys are attracted to.
Right. And the problem, one of the problems that I see with the Protestantism, you know, and look, I know both worlds. And speaking of Protestantism and Catholicism, I mean, this is the German dilemma in our identity. This is the German split soul, the Martin Luther, you know, who defies the papacy, and at the same time, the unifying body, which is the Holy Roman Empire. So, yeah. that, I mean, Germany is the country where all of this started. And when I stand on top of the, you know, the fortress, a mighty fortress is our God, Luther's hymn, in Thuringia, the Wartburg, where Luther translated the Bible, and, you know, through the ink glass at the wall because the devil was bothering him, you're standing there filled with fascination. And at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, I hate how all of this, due to the fact that the church split, has now ended up in the dumps. And when you look at Protestantism, the mainline Protestantism, you know, the evangelical, so-called evangelical Protestant church in Germany, the state church, is dead. And as Christian said, they're basically a woke, liberal, extended arm of the Green Party.
Which was by design. I mean, that was intentional.
It was intentional, but and it was easier to do because of that. But at the same time, when you look at Protestantism, you know, I recently, my wife and I recently watched Borat. And when you look at that scene where Borat goes to the Christians, does Mr. Jesus love my neighbor? He loves your neighbor. You know, does Mr. Jesus heal the pain that is in my heart? And look, I've experienced those types of church services too. Then they start speaking in the tongues and he falls over. People are running and everybody's sweaty and in their suits. And it's just, it's embarrassing. And I think a lot of young men are saying, no, I want the hardcore, you know, 6-hour service where the priest does some tradition that goes back to the catacombs of Rome or some cave in Greece. And I think that's that, as you said, Todd, that's the masculine aspect that a lot of young men are just seeing. That divergence, by the way, it's the young men that are going. And a lot of times the women are going to the more liberal side. And again, well, that's
in society. You know what they're teaching these young men in these Orthodox churches is that the man must lead the family and bring the woman along. So they're saying you have to become a good Orthodox Christian and then bring the women around you into the church. So I found that fascinating.
No, absolutely. And there's one more interesting thing. I mean, Fabian is sort of a more knowledgeable religious scholar, will now think Great Awakening. And there's one interesting trend I would like to point. I think there were a couple of Great Awakenings in the history of the Americas and Europe, sort of somewhat trailing behind. I think in the 1740s, 1840s, 1940s, and well, who's to say that it won't happen in the 2040s as well? I mean, the time seems rife, and I mean, I guess if we're reflecting about these dates that I've mentioned, typically always in times of big upheaval and questioning everything, you know, the 1840s sort of part of revolutionary Europe being born, people on the barricades in Paris, in Germany.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
The 1940s, you've just survived a terrible war. And well, with all the uncertainties that are happening right now, and in terms of the identity crisis, what are we? Actually, I think the time might be ripe, and it is to be born in mind. And I think we need to do far more reading how the last great awakenings went. But
good point. I've been doing a lot of studying on that, and one of the things that is always good with Christianity is that it has just survived absolutely everything. It's existed since Christ instituted his church, and it has gone through ups and downs. And you know, when you look at, for example, the period of the French Revolution, which is hailed as this great awakening of the Enlightenment, well, guess what? It was a dark time for Christianity. And churches were empty. And purposely, churches were turned into some kind of enlightenment temples, etc., etc. Well, guess what happened? Christianity survived, and Christianity came out of this. Voltaire said, you know, nobody in 40 years will read the Bible. Well, guess where they printed the Bible? In his house afterwards. So there've been a lot of movements that always show the vitality of Christianity. And maybe, again, all of the secularism and what we've witnessed in the past decades, if not even the 20th century, we can see that this inevitably, I believe, will be culminated in a new Great Awakening. And if you have now from a Catholic point of view, if you have a bold pope who defies, you know, governments, who defies rulers, who defies kings, who defies evil, that will have a great effect on the faithful. However, if you have a pope who believes that he wants to be more like the diplomatic corps of the Munich Security Conference, this can also lead the faithful to be very discouraged. And that all of that is on the table right now. I don't know which way it's gonna end up, but I do know that, you know, looking at a lot of the papacies, you can always see what happened politically. For example, look at Pope John Paul II, how he worked with Ronald Reagan together to bring an end to not only the Cold War, but to really defy the evils of communism. And who knows what, again, as I mentioned earlier, if you elect somebody like Cardinal Robert Seurat, who's, by the way, been very outspoken, and he even sees, for example, the United States as a beacon of hope for faith and a great awakening. I mean, he sees that, and he said that too. What if he is the leader of a Christendom that not only warns of the decline of Christendom, but, you know, defies it and defies all of these globalist trends that we've witnessed in the past couple of years. And again, as I said earlier, a pope from Africa who's anti-migration in that essence would just be a complete shock to the liberal world. The other thing, the last point I want to make on the papacy, and then I think, Christian, we should shift gears to Germany and what's been happening there briefly with the AfD. Every time the media props up a pope or a certain candidate, and they're doing that, especially in the United States with the current Secretary of State for the Vatican, Cardinal Parolin. I mean, you'll probably witness the Kamala Harris effect. You know, you had just yesterday Rabbi, what's his name, Shmuley Boteyez going to Parolin to endorse him. And I'm thinking, boy, this is not a good idea. but every time the media props up some certain cardinal, you may just not end up electing that guy.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I would probably stay within the... in the realm of a religion, and probably we might bracket out secular things, because I think it might be a nice self-contained episode, because right now, I mean, it shows the strength that one world church has, like the Catholic Church, where suddenly the Vatican is the center of the universe. And obviously in an unbelievably powerful picture of Zelensky and Trump sitting in the circle, so to speak, the inner circle. I mean, Macron having just been pushed out in the circle. The German Chancellor Scholz, who, by the way, is still Chancellor, still not even in the circle, not even in the building, kind of showing the constellation, the power constellations in Europe. So there's a lot to be said how very quickly suddenly the church has become the center of the universe, with so many heads of state paying homage, even heads of state who are decidedly not Christian, if not anti-Christian. So that is interesting.
Do you think it is indicative that the Pope died on Easter?
I mean, it is. I mean, one of these providential dates. I mean, we kind of joked a lot about
kind of that. A rebirth, if you will.
I mean,
of a real church.
I mean, stranger things have happened in world history. I mean, quite often, if you look at certain dates in history, even like September 11 has a couple of disastrous events happening.
But the point is really good, Todd, because Pope Benedict died on December 31st, which is the date of Pope Saint Sylvester. And in Germany, we actually, everybody calls December 31st by its name. They call it Sylvester. On Sylvester, we'll do this or that. And he died on Sylvester, and some traditional Catholics in America were especially interpreting that as sort of Benedict being the end of Christendom, with Benedict dying on December 31st, symbolizing that reign that Christendom had. Now, that would be interesting to see with Francis dying then on Easter, all of a sudden representing a sort of a new era and a new revived era that we're now entering into. And that could possibly be.
Well, you could throw a whole other wrinkle on this, you know, because we all know that Trump is a time traveler, and maybe J.D. Vance was too. And J.D. Vance met the Pope 7 hours before his death. So, you know, anyway, that's a joke. But
It fits into the general pattern, the surreal era we've entered, where, you know, we wouldn't have thought a million things that the U.S. presidential candidates shot through the ear and stands up, fight, 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 to somehow the Secret Service then letting another guy within shooting distance. I mean, so many bizarre things. Although,
what did J.D. Vance say to the Pope? I'm going to make sure that the traditional Latin Mass will be installed in the United States. And that was the end.
They're brilliant memes. Yeah. And I mean, we live in a great meme day where you suddenly see Trump being crowned as the Pope by J.D. Vance. I mean, those are just meme gold. Probably, I mean, another interesting bit that coincided the last couple of days. So the current socialist Spanish government wanting to close down some sort of, I'm not sure how it's called in Spanish or in English, Valley of Remembrance, because of obviously a lot of Franco soldiers died there. And it ties into something that a new pope ought to be very sensitive to, which the current pope isn't. When the current pope cozied up to Bernie Sanders, when Bernie Sanders was still a thinly veiled communist, and he totally, I don't think he was either ignorant or dishonest about the history of prosecution of Christians by socialists or hardcore communist government. And such a thing, I mean, for instance, the Spanish Civil War need to be talked about more. Why? Because the other side, consisting of anarchists, syndicalist anarchists, and actual communists, were planning to kill half of all Spanish Catholics. And I mean, these people killed something like 7,000 to 8,000 priests, nuns, seminarians, raped nuns deliberately, burned a lot of churches. And that seems to be the case whenever a hardcore socialist government comes into power, it's Christians it turns towards. I mean, even all the Ukrainian Christians who were starved out during the Holodomor. Nobody talks about these anti-Christian genocides these days. And a new pope ought to be directing people towards that, towards our martyrs in Christianity, and show that to sensitize Christians towards the dangers of socialist ideologies who see themselves as the new religion, who see themselves as being the ones handing down the Ten Commandments by state fiat. And so that's why I think it is so unbelievably important that the right man becomes the Pope, who needs to draw attention to all these Christian martyrs that we have and the dangers of socialism that has always turned on Christian. Not once, not twice, they always came for Christians because ultimately, Christians are always subject to a different kind of morality and always believe of so God created man and women in his image, and therefore believing in the new socialist man or the new boys. And you could just engineer men, women, children in the way that you want to. Christians will always object to that if they're proper Christians, and the new pope hopefully will draw attention to that. And again, I advise all viewers to read up on the Spanish Civil War, how hardcore anti-Christian and anti-Christian genocidal the Republican Spain was, that then essentially Franco, whatever other flaws that that Franco regime had, put a stop to that. And it is a much under-discussed issue, and I hope a new Pope will draw attention to it. So over to you guys for probably some concluding thoughts, unless I don't mean to usurp the topic, but I think it would be a nice, good, have a nice standalone sort of faith-based episode, because we haven't done that for a while, and politics
gentlemen, I have to go to another show, but I enjoyed it. Love the discussion. I'm going to drop out, and you guys just end it when you're ready, okay?
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, concluding thoughts over to you, Fabio.